Fred Film Radio, Berlin International Film Festival, Germany.
Fred Film Radio, this is Chiara Nicoletti from my last day at the 64th Berlin International Film Festival. And I'm with Christoph Ganz, director of Beauty and the Beast, screening in the Berlinale Special Gala. So, considering that it is a family film, why did you include some sensual scenes?
And, you know, for me, Beauty and the Beast has also a sensual feeling into it. You know, the two times the story has been written, it was by women. So I think that the feminine aspect of the film is quite obvious, you know. Mm. But we try to keep a good taste on the film, you know.
How much were you involved in the whole world of the film, apart from storytelling, obviously?
Completely, you know, because that's for me the big challenge when you're doing this type of film. You know, you have to create a complete world, you know, and that's what make me have a real passion for my work. So basically, I'm involved in every detail, all the color scheme, everything, because basically what I'm doing is that I'm designing the film entirely before to shoot. You have basically what you have seen, there is no improvisation at all. Also, it's why it was possible to do this film for this type of budget. If not, it would not be possible. Because we did the film for 35 million euro, which is a good budget, but very far from what we know in Hollywood, where basically the film of this type are 200 million, you know. It's simply because I'm designing everything during 6 months before to shoot, and after we are doing the film by the book. And also it was a challenge to do the film in a certain number of shots, 1,000, not one more, because every shot basically has a financial weight. So we had to be very respectful with what we have planned. So it's why, you know, it was possible to do this film with this type of special effects, this type of aesthetic for this price. If not, if you take a director which is not involved into the aesthetic, he will say, no, I'm not happy with that, try other thing. No, I'm not keeping this shot. And the budget will rise. So that's the advantage. But it means also that the producers are completely prisoner of what I'm doing, because I'm the only guy to just playing the music, you know. But to do this type of film, you know, you must have a strong connection with the producer, and I know very well the producer, because he has also co-produced Brotherhood of the Wolf, Pacte des Loups, and also, you know, I was surrounded by the best of the French profession, you know, in terms of costume, set design, etc., etc. They are all the people I have picked are the top.
Mm-hmm. I've read that you got the idea of shooting on a stage with a big screen behind from your research on the Swedish calendars.
Yes, you know, it's I have an obsession for the old cinema, you know, because I'm a cinephile, and when I'm not shooting, I'm spending my life to watch films, old films, and I have a big passion for the French cinema of the 40s, you know, and the Jean Cocteau version was one of the great example of the type of production value they had, you know, reached in this time in France. And I wanted to go back to this period. I wanted to go back to the feeling of the studio, you know, and it's why, except the sequence of the hunt where the people are running after the deer in the forest, except this sequence, everything you have seen has been done on set with digital extension. So basically, when you're doing that, you have to build at least all the contact spot of the actor. For example, if the actor is walking on the bridge, you have to build just the path on which he's walking. If he touches a wall, you need to have a piece of wall. Mm-hmm. And sometimes, because we had a great number of sequences done, for example, in the main room in the Castle of the Beast or in the bedroom of Bear, we decided to build entirely the set. Mm-hmm. But except these two sets, everything you have seen has been recreated by a computer. And it means that you have a complete control of what you're doing. And me, for me, what was important is was to reproduce the feeling of the painting of the 19th century, very European painting, you know, mainly done during the First and the Second Empire, where the painter has so much technique that they gave so much attention to the detail, to the light, that when I see this painting today, I have the feeling that it's almost a missing link between the traditional painting and the photography. It's almost like, you know, these people were, you know, imagining what would be, you know, the feeling in front of the photography, and even the feeling of the digital arts, you know. Sometimes when you watch this painting, they are so baroque, so precise. You smell something which looks like, for example, what we see in the video game, you know, so precise. Yeah. And basically, I wanted to create a bridge between this 19th century inspiration and what the people of today, the kids of today are used to. The kind of imagery that they used to with the cinema and the video game, of course.
In Hollywood, for example, they're all trying to modernize like fairy tales. I'm thinking about Ansel and Gretel, for example. So, but you, on the other hand, try to put your film into an historical setting.
You know, because first I'm European, and I have I'm perfectly aware of the past of the civilization, European civilization. So, you know, I understand perfectly when I see, for example, Alice in Wonderland by Tim Burton, or when I see the trailer of Maleficent, the new adaptation of Sleeping Beauty, I can see clearly that they try to recreate in 3D the graphic feeling of the Walt Disney movie of the 50s. You know, yes. It's obvious that they try to capture, you know, the style of the designer. Me, I, of course, because you know, I have much more range in my back, because you know, I have all this century of civilization. So for me, it's more easy to say, okay, I'm not going to make a reference to Disney, but I'm going to make a reference to the painter of the 19th century, and it makes also my film different. You know, I didn't want to do a movie which looked like an American picture. It's not because I'm using extensively the special effects. But I want to make something which look like Hollywoodian, you know. It's not because I don't like Hollywood. I like Hollywood like everybody. I like Hollywood movie from Hollywood, but simply, you know, I like to think that when the American people, for example, will see this film, they will find it very exotic. See what I mean? Mm-hmm. They will say, okay, I recognize the story, but it looked different of everything I have seen. And for the moment, the first reaction I have from Anglo-Saxon audience is that they are very surprised. They say, oh my God, you know, it doesn't look like a movie from Hollywood, but it looks like a big budget. But sometimes it's great to just add something new to the cook, you know.
And speaking of Hollywood, you chose Patrick Tatopoulos to work on creatures. And he works in Hollywood.
He's a French guy like me, but he works in Hollywood.
So did you brought his idea on the aesthetic of the film?
Patrick Tatopoulos, which is a good friend of mine, you know, he did all the creature on Silent Hill, my personal. Yeah. And Patrick basically studied arts in Les Beaux-Arts à Paris, you know, so he has a classic formation, you know, of painter and designer, you know. He is extremely talented. But of course, he had no work in France, so he decided to go to Hollywood, where he became a very famous production designer and monster maker. So Patrick, you know, makes the jump. And sometimes, you know, I'm calling him, and we talk about the kind of film we would like to do, you know, according our French culture. For example, actually, we are talking about adapting again Jules Verne, you know. But really Jules Verne, I mean, you know, action adventure set in the 19th century with all the science fiction elements, you know, the retro science fiction elements. And I know with Patrick, he understands completely what I want.
Where do those little strange dog creatures come from?
Oh, the Tadam. Tadam, you know, I want... One of the things I was interested in is create the idea that the beast, the prince, was not the only one to be cursed. You know, I wanted that his dog be cursed, but also his friends become a giant at the end, you know. And for me, it was interesting because I want to create something like an assembly of creature. It's not just about the beast. It's a curse which has strike everything, you know, because it's a God will. You know, in the film, you know, they have been cursed by a god. They are not cursed by a fairy or a witch. They are cursed by a god, and the god decide that all this place, all the people inside it are going to be cursed. And on this level, it's very close of Silent Hill. You know? Because what I like, you know, is when you create world, is create not only a beautiful environment, great sets, but create things which inhabit it. You see what I mean? You know, in Silent Hill, one of the pleasure I had to do this film was it was a crazy, strange, you know, town populated with strange creatures, you know, and some of them were originally kids, some of them were originally teachers, some of, you know, and I like this idea that in this film, which is a dreamish version of Silent Hill, the dogs become the Tadam, this little creature. Also, I have the feeling that one of the things which that we like into the fairy tale is the fact that we have it's always about scales. So the kids like to see small things, and us, when we are big kids, we like to see, for example, bigger things, you know, like the giants at the end, you know. And I like that. I like this idea that in the fairy tale, the scales have something important.
Right. How did you work on the beast? Did you already have in mind how you wanted it to be?
Yeah, because for me, one of the metaphors of the beast is that is a symbol of something which is going to be. It's a symbol of the kingdom and the symbol of the empire, which are going to disappear. And in France, the most obvious symbol of the empire that you can see everywhere in Paris is lion. So first, also because I wanted the beast very handsome, I wanted the beast sexy. As I said to Vincent Cassel, the beast is a better version of you. Because for me, monsters are better than us. You see what I mean? I think that monsters are stronger, you know, more, you know, sensitive than the human being. They are somewhere a refined version of ourselves. Maybe the you know the a step between the man and gods, you know, like in the old mythology of Greece, you know. So for me, you know, in the film, for me, obviously the prince acts like a kid, but the beast acts like an adult. You know, he became an adult as a beast, and now that he became an adult, he has to go back to human shape. You know, that's my way to read the story, and it's why I wanted the beast very handsome, you know, with the blue eyes and, you know, and the furs, and he has this kind of almost Egyptian look, you know, with the little you know, bear, you know. I like that, you know. I think it's always interesting when you see a monster and you say, hey, you know, it's quite sexy.
And we'll be back in a few minutes with Christoph Ganz from the 64th Berlinale for The Beauty and the Beast. Freffi Radio, we're back from the 64th Berlin International Film Festival, and we're talking with Christoph Ganz, director of Beauty and the Beast. Can you tell us more about the symbolism in this story? Because originally it had been written to convince, like, young girls to marry older guys and save the family.
And it's why, you know, I'm not crazy about the old, the common version of the story, which means you know, oh, you need to see the beauty of the soul behind the bad look. For me, that's very petit bourgeois, you know. That's very, you know, because you're right. Originally, the book was written for the girl to convince them to marry older guy. So you know, that's a kind of moral that I don't even want to think about today, you know. So for me, you know, when you read the book, it's more interesting to have a reading that The Beauty and the Beast is about the love story with problem between the civilization of man and nature, and the force of nature, you know. And I prefer that. And for it's why for me I reintroduce in the story the idea of a god of the forest and the fact that the prince has a very bad relationship with nature because he's a hunter and he kills everything, you know, and he's going to be punished for that. And I think it's more modern in a way, you know. And also, you know, I didn't want to make the beast like a noble guy, you know, with a face of an animal. For me, he's a little more an animal than a human being in the film. You know, he tried to act like a human, but at any moment, you know, he snapped to the beast and jump on the table and walk on four legs. You know, and he's a dominant. You know, immediately, you know, he's like a big cat. And I think it was a much more modern way to treat the good old story that we know very well, you know.
Did you know the story when you were a kid?
No. It's basically I saw the Jean Cocteau film when I was 5, and I was blown away. It's still one of my favorite French movies. And it's crazy because when I saw it when I was a kid, you know, I was 5, and I had the feeling to live a dream with my eyes open. You know, it was very strange. It was not like the other films. It was much more like a dreamy experience, you know. And I saw this film again and again and again. And of course, I learned everything about the film and everything about the relationship between Jean Marais, Jean Cocteau, and everything. And anyway, still today, I'm still looking at it like a dream, you know. And it's why, you know, in my film, I try to respect that. I try to respect the fact that most of the narration is a dreamy things, you know, where she falls asleep and she starts to move between two dimensions, the present and the past, and, you know, and she sees this big opening and up we go through this opening and we are in the past and everything. I try to keep that.
In Cocteau's version, the sexual undertones are less present, and in yours they are very relevant. I mean, from my point of view,
so it's more obvious in my film, you know, and also the imagery of the film in my film is obviously sexual, yeah. But all the opening and everything, you know, the big entrance in the heist and everything, it was done on purpose. But I know that nobody would see it. No kids would see that. I love the sequence where he jumped on her on the frozen lake. And at the moment of the kiss, the ice explodes and she drown into the frozen water. It's for me, it's a way to show the transgression. You know, this girl is ready basically to be kissed by an animal. So you know, in my head, I was thinking, okay, I want to do a sequence that kids can watch, but the parents will understand very well what it's about. Mm-hmm. But in the same time, they will not be. It will not be a problem that the kids be with them.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, that's one of the strengths of the fairy tale, is that you can basically compose your image on different layers, you know. Mm-hmm. And in a symbolic way, you know, you can basically tell everything, you know, and not hurting anybody. Of course, you need to have imagination, and but it's a cool thing with the fairy tale. It's why I like fairy tale, you know, and it's why I think that making a dark fairy tale is completely stupid, because fairy tale by essence is also dark. Mm-hmm. It's light, but it's also dark. You know, there is no dark fairy tale. No, fairy tale have these shadows, you know, and when you embrace the fairy tale. Also with the nice aspect, you know, the little creature and the roses everywhere. Yeah. When you create a sequence where you have a dark undertone, it becomes even more striking.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You told us how much you loved Cocteau's film, but you didn't you find it intimidating to tell the same story?
Not at all. It was galvanizing. Mm-hmm. Simply because Cocteau made his own version of Beauty and the Beast, you know. And it was about the Beast. It was about Jean Marais. It was about his relationship with Jean Marais. Belle was not so important in the film of Cocteau. And it's clear, you know. Originally, do you know the story that originally it was Jean Cocteau didn't want to direct the sequence of Josette D. It was the boyfriend of Josette D, Marcel Pagnol, who had to direct this sequence. But Josette D and Marcel Pagnol split, so Jean Cocteau kept Josette D and did everything. That's crazy. I mean, me, immediately for me, it was like a big sign to show the direction, you know, and say, okay, that's the story of Belle. Everything must be told from her point of view, and all the world of the Beast is going to be a kind of retranscription of her own psyche. So that was obvious. So it's why I think that if you take the Cocteau and mine, my version, basically they are complementary. You know, it's two different things, you know. And I like that because my admiration for Cocteau, I have the feeling that my film has a conversation with his film through the ages. Above 70 years, your films say something about the same story, but in a different way.
And what about Disney instead?
I'm not crazy about it. I'm not crazy, but I was certainly too old to see it, you know, back in the 90s, you know. I didn't like it. But in the same time, I recognize that this version make a huge impression on the people at this time. And it's why I kept the dancing sequence.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because for me, it was like, you know, because this sequence doesn't exist anywhere except in the Jean Cocteau and in the Czechoslovakian version made in 78, I like very much, of Beauty and the Beast. But this dancing is the big element brought by the Walt Disney version, and I kept it because I knew from the beginning that nobody in the world will love to see again Beauty and the Beast without the dancing. Impossible. And I said to my producer, there are going to be awards. But the good thing, the interesting thing for me is why, and it was obvious, is that how does the Beast know how to dance? So I had to do this sequence where she show him the free step. You know, and that was a nice things to do. So it's why, you know, I put my energy on. Okay, Belle is going to show to the Beast.
But the prince knew.
Oui, the prince knew, but it's not the same type of dance because the prince was living 3 centuries ago. So that's definitely. It's why, you know, I show the sequence where he danced with his wife.
Right.
But of course, he's dancing like a guy of the 15th century.
Right.
No, it was a cool things to do. And I enjoy very much to do the dancing sequence. And for me, the Disney has brought that, you know. Now, nobody can come back on this.
I've read that you decided from the beginning that you wanted Vincent Cassel.
And Vincent Cassel, yeah. It's very simple, you know. It's not because they are great actors. It's not because they are known internationally. But for a simple reason, it's because if you want to come with a new version of a masterpiece classic of the cinema, like the Jean Cocteau film, you need to have a great casting. Mm-hmm. If not, you're dead. People will not forgive you. It's impossible. It's very simple. You know, people know perfectly the Jean Marais, Jean Cocteau version, you know. So you need to come and people look your poster and say, Vincent Cassel, I said, yeah, mm-hmm. cool. But if you come with two common actors, people will say, no, I'm going to stay at home and watch again the Jean Cocteau version. You know, it's a matter of life and death, the casting of this film. So I was very lucky because, sincerely, when I was writing the script, I had no other idea. None. And I don't know what would have happened if they said no. I have no idea. But they accept immediately. I send the script. And they accepted immediately, instantly. So I was, because it's very important, you know. You can't come with something with just a title. You need to have, you know, the name of actors.
Okay.
And I think that Cassel is great as a Beast. You know, of course, he's a friend of mine, so I know his physical capacity, you know, and he play and fight a lot in Brotherhood of the Wolf, so I know what the guy is able to do. But I choose him because in the real life, he's a dominant. He's like an animal. When you are, even if you're his close friend, you enter in the same room as him, he watches you like that immediately. That's the first thing he's doing.
Oh.
You know, this guy is a dominant. He wants to be alpha dog, pure alpha dog. You know, and for me that was what I wanted to show of the beast. You know, immediately, you know, he enter and he's, you know, and he wants to dominate everything. And of course, my pleasure was to show Belle not dominated.
Yeah.
You know, and that's the quality that I can see in Leia. You know, Leia is very feminine, but she has something masculine in her. You know, something of a tomboy, which, you know, make her able to resist to the beast. You know, I like the moment where he jump on the table and say, low your eyes, you know, and she look at him like that. And you know, that moment was very interesting to shoot.
So first is Kashish, and then there's you and Cassel.
You know, exactly. You know, I didn't see the Kashish, because the Kashish was screened in Cannes 3 months after the end of my shooting. So, but of course, when Leia arrived on my set, she told me everything about the difficult relationship with Kashish. And I told her, I told her, you know, Leia, nobody cares. The only thing important is the film. And, you know, and a few months after, she got the Palme d'Or with the film. So, you know, but, you know, Leia is very interesting because she makes interesting choices also. You know, she's able to go from the Kashish film to mine, you know, and... You know, it's very, very interesting. I like this type of actor. I think it's, I like the actor which are, you know, traveling through different type of cinema, you know, very fast.
I would like to thank Christoph Ganz, director of Beauty and the Beast, for being on Firefly Radio. And this is Chiara Nicoletti from The Last Time at the 64th Berlin International Film Festival for Fred, the Festival Insider.
Fred Film Radio, 24/7 on Fred.fm and smartphone apps.